From Beijing to Berlin, from Singapore to South Carolina, from Cape Town to Canada, the world turns on business and commerce. And where there is such industry, disagreements are bound to happen. Sometimes these disagreements are resolved. For the rest of the time, they end up in the capable hands of professionals around the world. The dynamic and interesting stories of these individuals is what you will hear on this show, Tales of the Tribunal. Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with Chris Campbell. I am your host, Chris Campbell, and I appreciate you tuning in to join me on these weekly deep dives, profiles, and stories of these fine folks and individuals that make up this wide, wide world of international dispute resolution. I have a very interesting show for you today, but before we do that, I'll just do a brief recap of the last little bit. So I was in Washington, D.C. recently, got to see a really fantastic show and projection on the National Monument honoring the 50th anniversary of the moon landing. And more interesting and more relevant to the show, I got to meet some listeners and some fans of the show. They came up and spoke and said they're really enjoying the show so far. So if you should see me out here in these streets, I hope that you will speak up and you'll say hello, because that gives me ideas for the show and lets me know that someone is out there listening in radio/podcast land. So again, appreciate that. Beyond that, I was in Nashville, Tennessee, briefly to see some folks as well, and then I am headed back to Europe soon enough. So, as we look into this week's episode, we are featuring some attention, some fine individuals doing great work in my native, well, not native North Carolina, but in the Carolinas nonetheless. I'm speaking, of course, of Ms. Michael Worthy, the president of the Charlotte International Arbitration Society. She is also a partner at Cranfield Sumner, also based in Charlotte, and she does international dispute resolution work locally and abroad. She is an aviation specialist as well. You'll get to hear during the show that she is a pilot. She can take you up into the sky and take you on in the courtroom or in front of the tribunal. So it was a great episode with Micah. Really enjoyed listening to her and hearing her story, as well as hearing about the events that are coming up with the CIAS. And indeed, something that we talked about in last week's episode with Reka, this greater interconnectivity and synergy between various regional arbitration societies and organizations. So sit back, get comfortable, and get ready to listen to this interesting story. I hope you'll stick around for some footnotes and outro notes at the end of the show. Thanks for listening. Welcome back to Tales of the Tribunal with your host, Chris Campbell. Today, I am here in Charlotte, North Carolina, interviewing none other than the president herself of the Charlotte International Arbitration Society, Miss Micah Worthy. Micah, say hello to the folks at home.
Hi, everyone.
Great, great. Now, Micah, what do people, can you give us a little bit of your origin story? Who are you? Where are you from? What do the people need to know? Give us the background of Micah Worthy.
So I am a partner with Cranfield Sumner and Hartzog, and I'm in the aviation practice group, and I focus on the aviation industry, but also international contract disputes and counseling clients on their international trade issues. And I'm actually from Charlotte, one of the few born and raised. I went to Myers Park High School.
Oh, wow.
I went to St. Andrews in Laurinburg, North Carolina. And then I went to Campbell Law School, which is now in Raleigh, North Carolina. At the time, it was in a small town called Bowie's Creek. So, but then I moved back to Charlotte in 2008, started with Cranfield at that point, and have been with them ever since.
Wow. Well, that is, so you are truly Charlotte born and raised.
That's right.
Okay. Well, great. And so you went to law school. Let's back up and talk about that just a little bit. Did you know that working in aviation and eventually international dispute resolution was something that you wanted to do early on, or how did you kind of come across that?
Great question. Aviation wasn't at all on my radar at that point. International arbitration was. So when I was in law school, I was a vice moody.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
I went to Vienna two times. Professor Alan Button was our professor of international arbitration or international commercial arbitration. And I took all of the Campbell offerings for international business transactions that Judge Ridgway taught, anything I could get my hands on that was international. I knew I was interested in that topic, and so I wanted to get as much as I could in terms of the education while I was there. And I thought the Beast Moot was really the most the reason why I think I became the most interested, because it really gives you such an interesting look into how things actually work and how you might be able to practice in that industry. So so I went the first year to Vienna, and we went the second year in 2006 and 2007. Right. And then after I graduated, I was a volunteer arbitrator. I coached the Charlotte School of Law team while when the school was here. Sure. And we went to Vienna in 2012. And then you and I had talked about, I still always try to sign up to read the memoranda and try to give feedback to the students, because for me, that's very rewarding to be able to see all the hard work the students have done and to see especially what they think about the issues every year. It's very interesting how different students, different schools, and different traditions evaluate them and make those arguments.
That's right. And it sounds like the Visma certainly had a tangible impact on your career. Is that right?
Absolutely. So that was certainly the spark for me to really look into seeing how I could have a role in that industry. I knew that I wanted to come back to North Carolina, to Charlotte in particular. And so everything I've done, you know, with the firm is really trying to move towards doing something in that work. So I had worked for Cranfield for probably about 3 or 4 years. I moved into the litigation section so I could start getting experience with the international, with business transactions or business disputes specifically. So, and then after that is when I fell into working with the arbitration, the aviation group, because Susan Hofer came to our firm about 3 or 4 years ago, and I started working with her. So, and it's interesting because the two really overlap. There's a lot of interesting issues that come up when you've got planes flying overseas, when you've got manufactured parts that are from different parts of the world, and there's a lot of interesting implications. So the two industries have really been woven together for me in a really interesting way. So, and after law school, I was still trying to figure out like what education I would need. So I did take the master's class with the Cologne Academies and did the international arbitration course there. I thought that was really particularly helpful to solidify, you know, the information or the education that I would really need to have to build that foundation.
So that sounds so. I think maybe the guests and the listeners at home might think from that answer is that it was kind of a linear path, but you know. At the same time, it sounds like there were definitely some variables thrown in there, right?
Yeah, you're right. I think, and you probably have had this experience too, like, you know, when you have an interest or a passion, you keep coming back to it no matter how windy your path ends up being. So when I first started with Cranfield, I was actually doing workers' comp, and I enjoyed the aspect of being able to try cases. We had a lot more volume of claims, but I wasn't able to translate that experience into international or business transactions or business disputes. And so so that's why I started asking my firm about opportunities to start working in the litigation section. So, and then I had no concept about aviation law at all until Susan came to the firm, and she had a need on a big case, and it was kind of all hands on deck. And I was one of the associates that helped out, and I went to her afterward and said, "This was really interesting. Do you have other cases I can help you with?" And sure, it just picked up from there.
So, and to some extent, would it be fair to say that you had this interest in international dispute resolution, but the work in the beginning was not necessarily there? So you developed your skill set in one place first, and when those opportunities came that eventually took you a little closer in litigation generally, and then even closer still with international work, that's kind of the path you followed?
You're right. I mean, I wanted to do what I could to get the education that I needed, and also just the connections, like being part of the Beast Moot and being involved in organizations like the Charlotte International Arbitration Society. I wanted those connections so that when the opportunities arose, I felt like I could be prepared and be ready for them to come.
And let's not bury the lead too much. We started the show referencing the CIAS. What, for the folks at home that aren't familiar with CIAS, what are they?
That's a The Charlotte International Arbitration Society is a nonprofit organization here in Charlotte, and our primary mission is to be a supporting an organization that supports professionals in international business, and specifically highlights Charlotte as a potential venue for international arbitration. And so we've had a lot of international businesses that are in the Charlotte region. There's a lot of international businesses in both the Carolinas. And so we wanted to provide a way to support them by providing them an alternative to other dispute resolution mechanisms like jury trials or international litigation. And so far it's been great because anytime we have anytime in the state, in either state, where there's been some interesting international arbitration issue come up, our organization has either heard of it because of the board members or it's come through our channels. So we're really able to keep a good finger on the pulse of what's going on in the Carolinas in the industry.
So from your vantage point and being a founding member of the Charlotte International Arbitration Society, to now the president and doing a lot of work, do you think that there is, or what is your idea or conception of how regional organizations like CIAS or the Atlanta International Arbitration Society, how do you see the dynamic working between those types of organizations and the rest of the country and other regional groups?
That's a really good question. So with the Atlanta International Arbitration Society, we've got a great working relationship with them. Their founders and organizers spent time with our leadership to help us grow our organization. The thought process being that if we draw this type of work to the region, that, you know, the tide lifts all boats, that type of mentality. But the reality is what we're trying to do is provide the best client service to the companies that are already here. And so a lot of times the only experience that a company here might have with international arbitration might pull them to New York or to Singapore or to a different location that may not be as convenient to them as they would have liked. And so we're really focused on trying to give those types of companies an alternative and letting them know, you know, look, if you want to start with Charlotte as the venue, you can negotiate with the counterpart on where is the most convenient venue for your arbitration hearing. And we've got the Charlotte Airport, and we've got so many great venues and law firms in the Charlotte area that are supportive of different companies' needs. And so that's a way for us to give back to the company, to the clients, and to really meet their needs when they may not be met by going elsewhere or going outside of the region.
Tell me, what are some of the upcoming events or activities that are coming up from CIAS?
Well, we just had an event in March where we hosted with Northeastern University a program on data security, cybersecurity, and the global impacts of data security. So it was a really interesting program. North Carolina just adopted a requirement for attorneys in their CLE programs to have 1 hour of tech credit. And so this was a program that qualified for that. But our organization wanted to co-host it specifically because of the global impacts that could have. So we had not just attorneys there, but also industry leaders as part of their global leadership series that Northeastern puts on. And so we're looking into working with them on an event in the fall, potentially that could be focused on either doing business in Asia or the Asian business community here in the Carolinas. There's several different communities that are pretty close-knit. And so what we want to do is provide a topic or some educational programming that would benefit them. It may not necessarily be a legal topic. So we're looking at what might be interesting to them.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you got a lot on your plate. Do you have time for it? Are you active in any other extracurriculars, whether that be in law or something else?
So because of the aviation group, I have started taking flying lessons.
Flying lessons?
Yes. I'm getting close to soloing. I've been working with my instructor. I'm hopefully going to be able to solo by the summer. So that's my goal. But it's been a blast. For me, I thought, well, if I'm going to learn about the industry, I should go ahead and read up about the terminology and how things work. And the pilots that were involved in our cases made it sound like it was a lot of fun. So I thought, well, I'll just go ahead and take a discovery flight and see if I like it. And I felt like if I was scared, then I would kind of get it out of my system and I would never have to go back up in a small plane again.
Well, we're going to have to do a follow-up episode with you on your plane. You know, that's got to happen at some point.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been a blast. I'm flying a 172 and I go with my instructor and we fly out of Monroe. And then we go to like Rock Hill or Pageland or some other the local airports. So.
Wow, that is really cool. I mean, I think that is the first answer about being a pilot that we've got on the podcast. So that's pretty cool. Shifting focus just a little bit. Who have been some of the influences or role models or kind of guiding forces? I know you've kind of referenced a couple of people so far, but have there been any folks like that in your career?
I think Chase Saunders definitely needs to be at the top of that list. So he was a former judge in Charlotte. He was very well known in the community, but he's a visionary. He was the one who originally, you know, looked at the concept of a Charlotte International Arbitration Society as being a signal to the international business community that we've got the resources and the legal professionals here that can help support the community. And he was the one who really gathered the stakeholders together from K&L Gates, from Parker Poe, from my firm, from Cranfield, and just everyone to talk about if this is viable, how to get it started, what does it need to look like. And he's just been such a huge proponent of growing this this industry and this vision, and he's also been really supportive of me, you know, personally. So he had been sort of, I don't know if he would say he was grooming me, but I feel like he was really bringing me along in the leadership of the organization. So that, you know, last year he was able to nominate me for the chair position, and the board was happy to, you know, to elect me in. So I think he did a really good job thinking about the future of the organization and really wanting to support young people who are able to come into that role. So he's done a great job too with Whitney. You know, Whitney Cambersell is an associate at Womble, and he's been very encouraging of her participation as well and your participation as well in the organization. So he's a huge fan of you, and he's been a really good mentor in the whole process.
That is absolutely true. When I first came back from China and was looking for who were the thought leaders in the Carolinas about international dispute resolution, I mean, you cannot have that conversation without mentioning Chase Saunders and all the work that he's doing and just really thinking, I think, down the line from what people are talking about in terms of dispute resolution and being part of the global community.
Well, he's got a knack for really looking at the future and being able to see around the corner. Like, you know, he's already thinking about Shenzhen and how the, you know, market is changing and, you know, what role we might be able to have in that global conversation where it's not on many people's radar. So I think he's done a really good job surrounding himself with people that he thinks are intellectually just fun to get to know and, you know, like yourself and other people that he really feels like he can learn from. But then he takes all of that and it's like a synergy for him and he just puts it all together and connects the right people. So he's definitely been one of the people that I think we need to give a shout out to.
Sure. So keeping in that same vein about CIES, before we get shipped off the topic altogether, what during your tenure as chair and your involvement with the organization, what is your vision? I mean, what would you ultimately like to see for CIES?
So we're getting a lot of the organizational pieces put together, and that doesn't seem like a grand vision, but it's really important to me to make sure that we've got all of those pieces lined up and working right so that it can be a sustainable organization in the future. And then, you know, for a vision perspective, like what I would love to see the CIS is really the go-to resource in the Carolinas. And so whenever there's an international arbitration or any dispute, really, it doesn't have to be international, but if there's a arbitration hearing or an issue that needs to occur, that the people know they can go onto our website, they could schedule hearings, they could schedule translators, you know, any resource that they would need, find the venues, find the locations, and get it all set up without having to interact with a staff person at the CIAS or anyone. My vision for it would be that it'd be completely user-friendly so that practitioners could come in, fly in for their, for their arbitration, you know, hearing, and fly out, you know, so it just would be a seamless process.
I think that's a bold vision, and I think a lot of times with new initiatives, people don't take the time to lay the foundation or account for the cost. And I think that that is essential. It's a good idea. Okay. And this is a question for you specifically. How do you manage your work-life balance? I mean, you're chairing the CIS, you're a partner at a law firm, you're learning how to fly planes. How do you maintain that balance mentally and physically?
It is intentionally building in time to relax or to do something that's not work-related. So actually, the flight lessons has helped with that because I have to keep on the schedule to make sure I'm progressing appropriately. And so that's just time I got to block off on the weekends that I know I'm not going to be thinking about work, that I can't be thinking about, you know, a case that's going on. Like, I have to be focused on learning this skill. And the same things with, you know, with my family. Like, when I come home, I want to be done with work. I know that there's times when I need to hop back on the computer. You know, I'm going to meet my deadlines. But to the extent that I can spend time with my husband and just relax, I'm going to block off that time and really appreciate it. And I think that the only reason why I can do that now is because I feel like I've had enough experience where I know, like, to enjoy some of that time as opposed to fretting over not having all your billable hours in that week. You know, like, it will all work out if you're being diligent and, you know, and you're a hard worker. So for me, it's really carving out time that you will dedicate to not thinking about work.
Well, as a millennial, that really resonates with me. This idea of we're willing to put the work in and put the time for it, and we are competitive. We are people that are high achieving and want to do well, but at the same time, there are more important things in life than work, in terms of family, in terms of spending time with your loved ones. So.
You, because, you know, our work is so stressful, and it can be, and it's intellectually difficult. So it's going to drain your energy. So you do have to find things, your hobbies or being with your loved ones, you know, anything that you know will build you back up and will help sustain you. Otherwise, I think it's easy for people to get burnt out.
Okay, so we're going to do some rapid fire questions.
Okay.
So first, what are you reading right now?
I just actually finished Becoming, the Michelle Obama book.
We have a handful of guests on the show are also reading that. I'm actually, and listeners will be able to judge me a little bit for this. I'm actually still finished reading it. okay, so how are you enjoying that?
I think I just finished it like either Monday or Tuesday. I think it was a really interesting perspective from the First Lady. Like, I don't know. I'm sure there's other autobiographies out there, but I hadn't really thought about the perspective of not the president or not, you know, someone in the cabinet, but the First Lady who doesn't, that's not even really a real title. That's not even a like real position. So she really had to create that position and find a way to make that position her own. So, and I think she did it in a way that was interesting and different from a lot of the traditional roles that other First Ladies have had. But in a way that was still very characteristic, and I mean, overall, I think it was a really interesting look at that, at her whole life. I mean, it was just really fascinating to read the whole thing.
What are you reading next?
So next on my list is actually a book called Lincoln in the Bardo, a novel, and it's narrated by Nick Offerman.
Okay.
So that's the next one in my queue, and what I typically do is, like, I find books that I think are not really, they're not like related to my work, or they're not related to anything that I think I'll necessarily need to know. And that way it's really more about entertainment for me, and I can just listen to it and or read it and just really enjoy it and get wrapped up in it.
What music do you like? What are you into?
So let's see, at our house, we listen to, well, I personally listen to just like a lot of pop, like a lot of top 40 stuff.
Okay, sure.
But my husband really likes jazz, so we listen to a lot of jazz. He loves New Orleans, and so we've got a lot of music in the house that is typically like from something he's picked up in New Orleans.
Sure. So what are some of your favorite artists? I mean, who do you like to listen to in the top 40?
Top 40, well, I mean, I really like Lady Gaga.
Okay.
Did you see
Star is Born? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, that girl, she's amazing. She's got some pipes.
Yeah, she can sing. She can sing, as we would say.
Sing, yes. So I like anything she does, really, music-wise, too. I don't know. I mean, like, I haven't really been listening to a lot of music lately, just because I've been listening to, like,
you know, flying planes. that's fair enough. What was the last movie you saw?
Black Panther.
Black Panther.
Oh,
Wakanda
actually,
Forever.
Yes, I just saw that one, and I just the other one I just saw was Winnie the Pooh.
Oh,
Or no,
the Christopher
Christopher
Robin.
Robin, yes.
I have refrained from watching that movie because I don't want to cry for 2 hours.
It's cute. It's really cute. But I loved Black Panther. That was a great movie.
Yeah, and I just saw Avengers a couple of weeks ago. So that's we could. This is not a Black Panther podcast. Otherwise, we could easily talk about that for a while. Okay, well, great. Well, that's the rapid fire section. So Micah, if you were approached by a recent graduate from law school or someone that's already working in the field but wants to work and do more international dispute resolution work. And they say, Micah, we know that you've had this great career, that you're doing all this cool stuff. You're the chair of CIAS. You're out here flying planes. What should I do to break an international dispute resolution? What advice would you give them?
Advice, if they are in the Charlotte region, if they're in the Carolinas, would be to join the CIAS, and that would really help them connect to the thought leaders in our area. And then secondly, I think the Vis Moot and the Moot Alumni Association is one of the key groups for the professionals who are really doing this work. So if someone's like interested in doing this work, I think they do need to go to Vienna for like the Vienna Days or like for those types of programs and engage in that process. The MAA, the Moot Alumni Association, I think does a really good job of putting information out to people about those different events and different opportunities that might be out there. And I think that the more involved you are in the community of people that do that, the more likely you're going to be tagged for a leadership position or if a position comes open that you might be qualified for, you might be on the top of their mind when that position opens.
So the Moot Alumni Association, but I guess that advice would probably also hold for, any active young international arbitration or dispute resolution group. Is that right?
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. Young ICA, any international arbitration center or arbitral institution that has like a young affiliates group, I think is a really good place for new young practitioners to get involved in. And it's good anyway because those are the people who you grow up with who are going to end up being in that industry, and so they're really good connections to have over time.
How do you feel about writing articles or making content? Do you think that's something that's worth time? Because the thought sometimes would be long form articles, sometimes people just don't read them. how would you, what do you think about that?
Depends on the publication. I do think it is a worthwhile endeavor, and I think some people have different development skills. So, for some people, writing may not be the way that they get their name out there. It might be more that they just meet with people, in these organizations. But that may be intimidating to others, and so writing might be the more appropriate way for them to get their name out there. And there are some publications, there's some organizations like I'm in the International Association of Defense Counsel, and they have a very high quality defense journal that they produce. I think it's on a quarterly basis. And so when I got published in April in that was to me that was a big deal because it was a long form article. I did a lot of research for it to make sure I had the correct information on a very interesting topic. It was on public policy and international arbitration. And to me, that is definitely a worthwhile endeavor because I do want people to think of me as a thought leader in that industry. And I want to be thinking about, what types of things they would be looking for as a source. So, to the extent that there are publications that are well known and have good reputations, those are really good to be, to put the time and the effort into getting published in those organizations.
Yeah, fair enough. This is the fun question, the one I like to always hear what folks are going to say. It is 5 o'clock on a Friday. You have all the client matters have been dealt with. No one needs to get in touch with you. They won't get in touch with you over the next couple of days. How do you spend your weekend? You can do anything you want.
Oh, anything I want. I'm going home. I put my PJs on. I'm going to sit in front of the TV with my husband and my cat, and we're going to watch TV.
That's not a bad plan. That is a good way. That's a fun way to spend a weekend. Okay. Well, before we go, Micah, do you have any shout outs that you want to give to the folks listening at home?
I do. So, of course, I want to give a shout out to my husband, Kyle Worthy. I also want to really give a shout out to all the members of the board of the Charlotte International Arbitration Society, because they're just an amazing group of attorneys and professionals who are really supportive of the organization. And I also want to give a shout out to my firm, to Cranfield, Sumner and Hartzog.
That's fair enough. Well, shout outs to Cranfill and to Kyle and to everyone. And Micah, you want to sign us off?
I am Micah Worthy, and there is no disputing that you're listening to Tales of the Tribunal.
So I hope you enjoyed that story, that a little bit of background into not only Micah's career, but into all the fascinating and cool things that are going on in Charlotte. Whenever I get a chance to, and I'm in Charlotte, I try and catch up with Micah. She's always got some good advice and some interesting things to report on. So that's this week's show. There are just a couple of things I wanted to cover in this outro. First, I wanted to give a big shout out and a little bit of notoriety to Miss Amanda Lee, aka Mandy, for the good work that she is doing on LinkedIn with the hashtag careers in arbitration. Everything you wanted to know, but were too afraid to ask. And I think that is a great initiative that she has started. And just to give you the 30-second or 10-second rundown, it is an effort by Mandy to make the world of international arbitration and how to get into it a little less scary and approachable for new practitioners or for folks looking to get into the field. She's been posting opportunities and routes into the field for the last several months, at least. At least that's how long I've been following it. And she have a website and a number of other things that she is rolling out. But I wanted to give a shout out for that. She has a LinkedIn profile as well where she talks about these careers in arbitration. I think it's just literally called Careers in Arbitration. But certainly wanted to give her a shout out about that. We should really look into getting her on the show. I'll have to try and see if we can make that happen. In any case, if you're enjoying the show and if you have any comments or suggestions, like we mentioned in the intro, feel free to walk up to me in person if you see me. But otherwise, contact the show at talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. Again, that's talesofthetribunal@gmail.com. And there is one more thing I wanted to ask of you, dear listener. I have been considering branching out just a bit. As many of you may know, the way that we post these episodes currently are on my direct LinkedIn. Sometimes that can get a little bit tricky because not all of you are connected to me on LinkedIn. You know, LinkedIn has those limits. So what I'm thinking of doing is creating one additional platform. We don't want to overwhelm you. We're not a media company. But I am thinking of branching out to an Instagram, having a standalone LinkedIn page for Tales of the Tribunal, or maybe even a website. So if you have any thoughts about that, maybe leave me a comment or send me a message on what do you think, or send me an email. I'm thinking of doing that. So we might get into developing that over the next month or two in time for the wrap up of this first season. In any case, thank you for listening. I really do appreciate it. One of the reasons why I've made that second request in terms of asking for your input is because we have gotten so much positive feedback on the show and you know, from all different levels, from new practitioners to veteran practitioners. So it's fantastic to watch this grown very organically from just a dozen or so folks to now several hundred that tune in every week. So I really appreciate your support, and I appreciate you tuning in week by week. So without further ado, that is this week's episode. We'll be seeing you next week, and there's no disputing it. You are listening to Tales of the Tribunal.